Turn it up.
Get ready.
You're tuned in to VO Buzz Weekly.
The show where aspiring voice actors,
established VO pros,
and curious fans alike get to meet and learn.
From the mega successful talent in voiceover.
Hear their personal stories.
Find out how they became so successful.
Learn their secrets and join them at the top.
Seriously Buzzed with your hosts, Chuck Duran and Stacey J. Aswan.
Hey everybody, I'm Stacey J.
And I'm Chuck Duran.
Welcome to another amazing episode of VO Buzz Weekly.
And amazing is correct. We have on the show today the awesome Charlie Adler, voice actor, voice director, and he is here to blow your mind.
Absolutely.
Yep, it's going to be a great show.
Well, it's been a very busy summer.
Has.
For us, and I'm sure for you guys, and the summer is not over yet. We want to remind you that there is still time to get tickets to That's VoiceOver happening here in Los Angeles at the Directors Guild, August 17th, 2013.
Do not miss it.
You do not want to miss it. Joan Baker and Rudy Gaskins have put together, to say the least, an epic, amazing event. So
yeah,
join us. We'll be there. We hope to see you. And then the following Saturday, August 24th, 2013, is the Don LaFontaine Poker Classic.
Whoa, we're going to be gambling.
Right? Texas Hold'em. Here we come. So that is
fun.
A fantastic event.
Yeah,
even if you don't play poker, you need to come because there's a silent auction, amazing food and music, and it's just a great, great time.
Dancing,
mm-hmm.
Disco. Woo,
yes.
Let's get down, baby.
Yes.
Oh, I'm telling you.
And they are working so hard to make it even more special than the previous year. So
absolutely.
August 24th.
Absolutely.
Make sure to go to vobuzzweekly.com and you can get the information there to the links. Or you can go to thatsvoiceover.com or sagfoundation.org.
That's right. And over the weekend, I was doing a little reading.
I know. Who knew?
And check this out. This book right here, Voice Acting for Dummies, written by Stephanie and David Cicerelli, who are also the co-founders of Voices.com. And I got to tell you, man, these guys, they know how to do it. They're like a first-class act here. And I read this because I was like, okay, so what's different between this book and all the other voiceover books out there? And one thing that I noticed for me was that this thing is like an encyclopedia, A to Z. You're not going to get A to D. You're going to get everything you need to know. So if you're out there, you're in the trenches, you're just starting out in voiceover, and you really, really want to make sure that you make correct choices so that you don't waste a bunch of
right
time.
Get on the right track right away.
So you don't waste a bunch of time or a bunch of money. This is an awesome read, and you need to pick it up right now.
You can go to voiceactingfordummies.com, and you can order the book there. So
absolutely. And let them know that we sent you, okay? Because maybe they'll give you a little extra discount. Shh. What else we got?
We've got Charlie Adler. It's time, Chuck.
Let's go.
Okay. I have no idea what's going to happen, but I do know that we have an amazing guest in the studio today. He is an award-winning stage actor and voice actor, known and loved for his work on Cow and Chicken, the Transformers movies, and Tiny Toon Adventures. He is also an Emmy Award-winning voice director for shows like Rugrats and The Wild Thornberrys. We are so excited to get buzzed with the very versatile and totally awesome Charlie Adler.
And uncensored Charlie Adler. Put it there.
I thought you were going to, like, welcome. I thought it was a gesture or something.
No, man.
I thought, oh, I have to do something.
We're so happy to have you on VO Buzz Weekly.
Yes, there's a chorus.
For
there's a whole dance number.
For 30 years, we've been hearing about Charlie Adler.
Yes.
Well, I don't know about 30 years, but for the longest time, man.
I'm not 30 yet.
I have good friends in the business that are always like, you got to meet Charlie. You got to meet Charlie. You got to meet Charlie. And here you are, man.
Well, here I am. Have you met me?
I met you. You're freaking cool.
We have lots of mutual friends, but we have not actually met. So thank you so much for being here. We are so excited. I know our viewers
are. I'm so nervous. Look, I'm fidgeting.
Fidget, that's fine. Fidgeting is good.
Just stay in frame when you fidget.
Oh, yeah. Which is frame? Is this frame?
Absolutely. So we have some questions for you, man. And I want to kind of start this whole thing off by kind of touching a little bit, you know, from a while ago. You started doing stuff on Broadway, right? And there was a show, what was it called?
Torch Song Trilogy.
And you toured with that show as well, right? Mm-hmm. How did that whole Broadway thing start for you?
I was an actor in New York. I mean, I grew up. I started working when I was 15. And I wanted to be in the theater! And for me, the most comfortable I am is probably in the theater. You know, you kind of go where what your mothership is. That was my mothership. I started in plays in school, then community theater plays, then summer stock, then dinner theater, then off-Broadway, then Broadway. So I worked for a chunk of my earlier years in the theater. And Torch Song Trilogy was a Pulitzer Prize winning, Tony Award winning play that Harvey Fierstein wrote for himself. And it was a three act play that started as three individual acts off Broadway at the La Mama Theater. And then he thread them together and it became Torch Song Trilogy, which was just a remarkable mountain to climb every night. It was thrilling. It was thrilling. Yeah. It taught me so much. It taught me so much.
That's cool, man.
Actually, I'm still learning. It's very strange. This came up. I taught a class up north this weekend and it came up. And I found myself answering that I'm still learning from having done that.
Wow.
Something occurs to me. You always want to revisit your life, which is just asinine.
Yeah.
But but I found myself maybe 3 months ago standing in my kitchen, not able to sleep, which is rare because I usually go into a coma at the end of the day. I'm like, but I couldn't sleep. And something told me to go to my library, and I pulled out the play. And I stood in my kitchen reading it out loud, like
out
a
loud?
Schmo. No, I doing. Oh, I did the show. Yeah. I did the show at 1 in the morning. By the way, it's a 4-hour play.
Right.
I don't know what possessed me, but as I was doing it, it occurred to me that I did the best I could at that time, but how much I've acquired since, that if I could revisit it now, and I think every actor feels that about everything they've done, if I could revisit it.
But the beautiful thing is that you did the best with what you could with it at the time, but it's informed you where you are now. I mean, as a voice actor, how do you think your experience on stage and in live performance, your one-man show, I mean, how does that affect your voice acting, do you think?
Because acting is acting.
Yeah.
Everything that we do is a character.
Yeah.
Every show we do is a play. Mm-hmm. It's storytelling. So whether you're telling a story with, you know, telling a three-year-old to go to sleep, or whether you're telling a story in front of 10,000 people, you're telling a story. Mm-hmm. And there are certain technical elements that change depending on what medium you go to and from. But the theater was, for me, how I understood my power. It sounds a strange thing to say, telling the story. Which was I was grounded. The only times in my life were doing plays because life was very challenging and strange, and that was I grew up this homely, skinny, weird, shocking kid, and
I
never fit in.
Look at you,
skinny and young.
I never fit in, and it was where, and you hear this from almost everybody how the theater does that for them, but it was instant. It was instant. My mother had the great wisdom to send me to a local acting teacher who is still one of my most beloved. She's 87 now in New York, and she's coached, over the years, very, very famous actors. Flo Greenberg, Flo Salon Greenberg. Mm-hmm. An angel from heaven, but I think I was 14 or 13 when I started working with her, and it was all summer. And so, you know, I'd be dropped off in the morning and be picked up at night, and because I lived very close proximity to New York City, we saw every single thing for the 3 or 4 summers that I went. That was in New York.
Wow.
And so I was immersed. And thrillingly, oddly, I don't know how this happens in life, but many of the people that were kind enough to get on the buses and talk to us after a performance, I have directed or worked with.
Mm.
It is so...
Wow.
I still gonna go. Wow, where life leads you. Who knows?
You don't know. Yeah.
You never plot it.
And a lot of things just come right back around too. I freak myself out with those all the time.
You do. You often
every
freak
day,
yourself
actually.
Out.
Well, that's how life is. That is what life, the substance of life, and you just have to pay attention.
You do.
Well, that's the key. You have to pay attention
because
there's so many opportunities, and if you're just kind of not present, you miss
absolutely.
Them.
But you know, it's very hard to become present. You know, we say these things, and I was just teaching this class, and flames shoot out of my ass when I hear this expression: "Just get out of your own way." When teachers say, "You just have to get out of your own way," what the hell does that mean? Somebody said that to me. I go, "How?"
Yeah.
That's what it is. How? Well, the how is: how do you get present? How do you get out of your own way? You have to know that you're safe enough with skill and acquire. Skill to know that you can survive certain uncomfortable adversarial moments in your life, whether they're personal or professional. So you can't just get out of your own way because that is a huge leap of faith.
That takes a lot of confidence.
Yes, and you don't get confidence unless you fall down and pick yourself up and survive. And so when I hear all the great philosophers and television personalities, et cetera, say, with great from the mount, just, you know, just connect and be present. Yeah. All right. And you were all the time? Really? It is how you find your way, and that word journey just crawls up my
journey.
It drives me crazy. It's a journey and process. Process and journey just piss me off. The hell is that?
What is it? What is that?
It's a pretentious word, like another bumper sticker. Get out of your own way. Another jingle.
Yeah, it's the journey. It's the...
We've pushed a button here.
Fall in love with the journey.
I have a lot of buttons.
Yes.
Yeah, he does.
Oh, let's try to push them all. No.
We are going to push them all. So check this out. So you're on Broadway. You're doing all the stage acting and all stuff. And obviously, you love that, right? It changed your life. But then at some point, all of a sudden, you start doing this whole voiceover thing. How did you make that transition? I
mean, it wasn't a transition because as a New York actor in the 70s, you were considered an actor.
Right.
And so I had one agent who did one thing. That was give me opportunity. I would go to the theater at night. How my days varied would be I would do radio commercials or on-camera commercials. When I had brown hair and eyelids, I did tons of commercials and was kind of known at that time for being one of the prototypical curly-haired goofballs.
Real guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And radio commercials were, you'd go to work. After the theater, I'd go sing in a club with friends. So you were just an actor.
Right.
These categories didn't occur to me until I moved out here. I had only done one animated thing, and that was My Little Pony special. Right. That was the first animated thing I did in New York, but I was still living in New York. And then the part two happened when I was touring with Torch Song, and I had to come back on my dark day and do the second one. When I moved out here, I had moved out with a hit show under my belt, amazing reviews under my belt, a commercial reel under my belt, but nothing that had to do with animation. Mm. In fact, it didn't even occur to me that animation was an option. Never really thought about it. When I came out here and went to sign with an agent, they said to me, I said to them, so you want to sign me for on camera, so who's going to do the radio, the voiceover? And he said, oh, that's a different department. I said, well, and? Well, no. I said, well, no, your ass. That's like half of my life.
And so they,
long story longer, I met them and...
And they said yes.
No, they did not say yes.
No.
No. They said like this.
See, now we're getting to the real story.
Yes. I love reenactments.
They said like this.
Yes.
By the way, Jenny McSwain is one of these people I'm talking about. I'd tell her the story. This is one of my dearest friends on the earth for life.
Awesome. She's amazing.
She's my soulmate.
Her.
Jenny and I are really like that. And Arlene Thornton was my first agent for 18 years. Mm-hmm. She was agenting Jenny with Arlene Thornton. Mm. Mm. So it's the two of them like this. Uh-huh. When they said was, well, come back and we'll hear you, what you have to do. What do I have to do? Well, just do some voices. Huh? Do some character. Okay. Next week.
Tuesday, 11:30. Bye-bye.
Like they were smelling something they wouldn't wipe off the bottom of their shoe. And I walked out and I thought, really? I didn't say that, but I know your audience, some of them are young.
Right.
Guess, fill in the blanks, two words. Mm. So I get my car and I'm thinking, wait a minute. I had been in two very successful improv companies in New York. Much of what I live in my head was characters. I went home and I took it as a great challenge.
Yeah.
And so I did. I started to improvise as some of the people that were cataloged already as that I knew.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Gave them new material. Went to children's books. Did that. Came back. Did the audition for them. I had a pith helmet on. Please don't ask. I turned my back to them. I said, it's too nerve-wracking. I don't want you to look at me. I did what I thought was 5 minutes. It was 12.
Oh.
And when I was done, I came out and they went from to, and very, all of a sudden, oh, the door flew open. Although Ginny was very loving to me in that she was very impressed with the Torch Song credit because she knew the show and she was lovely to me, except for the voiceover stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got me a general at Hanna-Barbera. It was a rainy day Jeannie McSwain showed up. My agent. Can you imagine an agent showing up to a general? That's what an angel, generous.
Never happens.
No, generous beyond. And still, in every way in my life, still the same generous person.
Yeah.
Anyway, she shows up in a trench coat, which I know she had nothing underneath. I know it. I know that's all she wore that day.
Well, she was Lois Lane, so you know, she...
I know it. I'm telling you, oh, it's Burl Live. I know it.
You know Jenny's watching right now. Jenny.
Is this live? I thought you edited
this. But she's going to be watching this. Well, good. Absolutely.
Yeah. She's insane. Anyway, so I'm. Anyway, she showed up. I'll never, as long as I live, there are things that Jenny has done for me in my life that are so full of generosity that hurts. Anyway, she showed up. I did my same thing. So I guess it was 12 minutes, and they tolerated me for 12 minutes. And as a result of that general, then I went to San Francisco and did a Beck's beer commercial, which I loathed on camera. By that point, I hated
it. You were down with on camera.
I really was.
Yeah.
So what a blessing to me, because I, besides feeling like the biggest whore in life, I was a vegetarian and selling McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah.
Arby's.
Where's my spit can? Yeah.
The lettuce part.
Don't worry,
of the Big
Mom. I'm eating
really good.
Yeah. I had a copywriter producer from an ad agency. Look at me. It was the first Arby's national campaign. Don't worry, Mom. I'm eating right. I think it was. This guy comes up to me. I swear to you. I swear this happened. He came up to me and went like this to me. Is that your nose?
What?
Thank you. And because I'm delicate, I went, oh my God, no! I took the wrong one! What person?
What kind of a question is that?
Well, that's what commercials made you feel like. You were under such a horrible microscope. And I had been to 3 or 4 callbacks. I had been at those days that were boardrooms, giant tables, and you had to stand there. So, apparently my nose was more than he could handle at that time.
Fine now.
He wanted a cute little ski jump nose.
Yeah.
So anyway, I digress. So I went, did the Beck's beer, and when I landed, I checked my thingy, and it said you had got Smurfs.
Nice.
Yeah. What?
I didn't even know. Maybe I did. You know, my memory's kind of daffy. I don't remember auditioning for Smurfs. I may have.
Yeah.
But if I didn't, it came from the general. In any event, that was my first.
That was your first.
That was your first.
Besides my Little Pony stuff. Yeah. And then My Little Pony became a series out here that Ginny ended up directing, that I ended up recreating the coveted role of Spike the Baby Dragon.
Fantastic, man.
Love it.
Coveted.
Wow.
Coveted role.
So Smurfs was really your first big break.
Animated series.
Yeah. And that's when things started rocking and rolling, man. How did you go from being a voice actor and doing all that type of stuff to actually directing and switching that role?
I could see.
Because let's be frank, this does not happen very often. Mm-mm. That people just switch like that. So this is special.
I don't know if it was a switch. There were a lot of things that conspired to this. I had been asked by Michael Bell, maybe 3 years after I got here, if I wanted to guest teach for his class, which he had a very successful class in Van Nuys.
Yeah.
And I did. And something, a light came on. I have to go backwards. I was also coaching actors in New York. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a foreign thing to me.
Okay.
And I was teaching improv in New York. So it wasn't, I just had to figure out.
You were used to articulating.
I wasn't used to articulating a medium that was fairly new to me. I really had it really forced me to understand that it was an actor's medium more so than I had ever really contemplated.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
And so it sort of forces you to think, really think and feel about what it is that you're trying to say and articulate that. That was a challenge for me. But over time, things started to really gel for me, and then I started to form my own class. And I believe I taught with Ginny for a while, then I taught with Chris Zimmerman for a while, then I went out on my own. You know, all of us just get tired and different cycles in our life. And then I didn't do it at all for many, many, many years because I was directing. So the question was, how do I segue to directing? So teaching was one of the things.
Yeah.
Another element that came into it was I really saw that there was a glass ceiling. I felt that there were a lot of forces with this that were very much out of my control.
Mm, yeah.
There were the people running the show have biases. Mm-hmm. I started to see behaviors that I thought were dangerous to me, and I started to hear things like, "Oh, he's on everything," or "Oh, you're on everything,"
or are you?
"Or I was on a lot of things." And yeah, but so what?
No, I
you know my yeah. I am only as good as I am in that day, and then I hopefully expand. Yeah. But when directors who've directed you just to be mean say, "Oh, that sounds like blah blah," just to stick it to you, you go, "Ooh."
Yeah.
I mean, what I wanted to say was, oh, and you sound like the same moron who directed me in that series a year ago, but I couldn't. So right. I was going, I don't know. It really gave me pause, and I thought, I like my life. I like to work. I love having purpose. I love having function. I need to use myself. I don't like the way this is starting to feel.
Right.
Concurrent to that, Barbara Wright, who was at Klasky Csupo, who was the casting director of Klasky, who's just this angel of a woman, mm-hmm. and I became friendly over time just because I was in many of their projects. Yeah. And she and I were having a lunch, as we did, and she said, we were talking about directing, and that Klasky Csupo was really artist-driven, and they didn't really have voice directors. And I said, I really would love a whack at that. I know I can do this. Mm-hmm. I had thought about it, mm-hmm. but no door had really opened.
Yeah.
And Barbara said, well, if I can get you the opportunity, how can they see, how can they have confidence in you? I said, send them to one of my classes. Show them what, I want to be able to them to see what I do mm-hmm. with performances,
right.
how I can enhance the performance. So graciously, unbelievably, Arlene Klasky, I think Gabor Csupo, and I think one of the producers, when the higher ups up there came to one of my classes. And very shortly thereafter, I had they gave me a trial of a Rugrats episode.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the writers and the art, oh, sorry.
It's all right.
The writers, I just destroyed everything. The writers and the artists, I'm not folding my arms as a body language closing off. It's just, I can't. No, I have nowhere to put my arms.
You can do.
This is over.
You
this
can do whatever you want.
The writers
arms.
And the
actually,
I'll just
you
do
fold
this
them again. That'd be better. Yeah.
The writers and the artists were very resistant because it was their turf.
Yeah.
They mm-hmm. didn't want to give up their turf, understandably. So to get them to be open to it, I had to really jump through an awful mm-hmm. lot of flaming hoops.
Yeah.
And did. And it just sort of segued to where I ended up doing all their franchises, their features, the
right.
Rugrats
shows
Live at Radio City
yeah.
Music
yeah.
Hall, Thornberry's, all their pilots. I directed a few as told by Gingers. One minute. I thought you were scolding me. don't do that. He's
that's
very
not true.
Naughty.
That's how it happens.
No. preschool days, all the crossover stuff. Anyway, that was the beginning, and then other studios started to hire me as a result of that body of work.
Yeah.
And now it's sort of split between the two. And I when I'm in each respective one, I love what I'm doing. It's not one or the other for me.
Yeah.
That day, I love that day.
You love that day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Charlie just said he'd rather be unpopular with the truth
than
be popular with the lie. And I want to know what that means.
It means that I have evolved into a person that would rather piss people off with an opinion and a thought that keeps my soul intact mm-hmm. than be duplicitous and walk around collecting votes for mayor. Mm. I'm not running for office.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There is a way to be kind, and there's a way to be direct without annihilating anybody, but there's also a way to be incredibly unkind by lying to somebody.
Yeah.
When you give somebody false hope because your ego wants them to like you,
yeah.
that is so cruel. And there's an awful lot of that in this town.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather somebody say, you know, people go home in hope.
Yeah.
They live in hope.
Yeah.
Their mortgage is on hope. They have families to feed. They have car payments. You give somebody real hope, great. But then when you crush them because it really they find out it was a lie, that is just...
Yeah, that's not...
Yeah.
I think it's
yeah.
evil.
It is really evil. It
yeah.
is evil. So going back really quickly to your directing, And so now you've become this amazing director, and people love working with you. I don't know what it is that you do while you're directing, but you must be really good.
It's a nude interpretive dance.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you. I'd have
so
to kill
check
you.
This out, though. So, because you said now it's 50-50, right?
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm. So when you're behind the mic now as the voice actor, and there's another director, how do you step back from the role of the director?
Because it's my job.
Okay, so you just accept it, whether you agree with it or not?
And I mostly have very strong opinions about it,
but okay.
that's not why I'm there. I'm there to do the job that I'm paid to do. I'm there to act, and I happen to love acting. And before I directed, I didn't always agree with what I was being told. Mm-hmm. So what's the difference? I have to honor what that chair is telling me to do, as I want it honored when I'm in that chair.
Right.
And I have to give... when I'm acting, everything that I have to make it work and to find a way to jump over something that I feel is not right or just do it the best I can do it. Life ain't perfect.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
But do you ever think to yourself, you know, I would direct that differently?
No.
Or never?
No. Okay. When I drive home, I do.
On the drive home,
when I drive home, I have a lot of Tourette's. but in real time,
at
that time, every now and again, I'll look at a fellow actor because I know a lot of eyes are on me because they're having a miserable time.
Yeah.
Mm. So I do take the bait and kind of go. and play along. Yes.
Sure.
That happens. Yeah. That absolutely happens. Usually, I would say it's 50-50. I either initiate it because I'm bored. Or somebody else initiates it, and I just say,
and you run with it.
Do I run with it? Touchdown.
It's just another improv. It's
absolutely.
Improv is saying yes. Okay, well, staying with your voice actor hat on at the moment, can you kind of tell our viewers, when you get sides for an audition and you see a character, kind of the steps that you take to bring that to life?
It's very strange that you ask this.
All right.
I'll tell you why. No, it is. It's a great question. But you know when you do something for a very, very long time? I don't know if you feel this. This is what I experience. I feel now at 57 that my understanding of my own work is as clear as it's ever been. I'm hoping for more clarity as I go. Mm-hmm. But in this minute, it's as clear as it's ever been. And it's as effortless as it's ever been.
Good.
And I feel that when we were talking about making fun of Get Out of Your Own Way, one of the things is that now when I just get copy, I don't read it. I don't look at it. I put it on the mic stand and I just devour it. And I know and trust that my eye and my brain and my heart and my gut all will find its way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Something will come to me. I don't break anything down. Because usually I stink when I do.
When you do.
And it stymies me. I'm a lousy technician.
Yeah.
And I know that I have an emotional memory. I know that when I do something that feels right, I'll do it again. And I'll make it more right. But I also know that as I'm reading it and translating it, things occur to me without meaning. It just occurs.
Not overanalyzing it.
At all. Yeah. But the analysis is happening in milliseconds, whereas it's like improv. You don't analyze something. An athlete doesn't, you say to a triathlete, how did you feel? They don't feel anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're in, yeah.
Well, when you were starting.
You're in your power. You're in your most alive place.
Yep.
Do you find when you were beginning your career, were you always like that? Just go with your gut, be in, I mean, obviously you came to the voiceover segment of your career with a lot of...
I think I've been two people.
Yeah.
I think to be perfectly honest and fair to this conversation, I think I've been two people. I think on one hand, I was always terrified and very afraid of being shamed and annihilated. And on the other hand, the one place that I started to understand that if I had any strength and potency at all was in what I did. Mm-hmm. And so they coexisted. And I have found myself at different times where the person that would feel damned or shamed would be protected by this person who has a great sense of himself. Mm-hmm. And I've really had to mesh them. The times that I've really locked horns with people were over what I felt were inequities that I thought was bad behavior, things that were inequitable. I have never been particularly smart in business. I have pretty much always said what I felt should be said without weighing or measuring that this is a business and people, there are ways to do that. And it's a miracle in many ways that I have survived, because I've certainly annoyed quite a lot of people. Mm. I would say quite a lot of people, enough people. Yeah. But in truth, the people that I've annoyed in hindsight are the people I would want to annoy. The people I've annoyed, I don't like.
They're coming, baby.
No, they're coming or not. In my heart, they are not people whose approval I'm seeking.
Yeah.
Right.
I can live without them.
Yeah.
And I am sure they feel the same way about me. Yeah. I am sure if we flipped it and they had a conversation, plea, and from where they sit, I've certainly given them the ammunition to say it.
Yeah.
I haven't been the easiest ticket in town with my opinions.
So you don't like breaking down anything, analyzing. You look at it, you put it there, and you just go with the gut, bam, and you trust yourself. And it works for you, right? Because if
Seems
it didn't,
to.
You wouldn't keep doing it all the time.
Yeah.
Even before we started recording the show, Charlie just said, don't tell me anything, let's just go. And so this is life. Not really, but it is.
But that's what life is.
You're right.
All I can do is have a very well-stocked toolbox. And that's skill, and that is knowing that I have the ability to survive anything.
Yeah.
I cannot plot what's going to happen in the next 3 seconds. I don't want to.
Right. So when you teach, how do you teach that? Or do you teach that?
Yes, I do. Like,
well, so what do you say
by developing the muscle, by working on the muscle and the muscles that show you that everything that you do is not a failure, even though it's not an end game.
Right.
That every single thing you do can become, in the tripping or the falling or not being exactly what you wanted it to be, that there is gold in every possibility if you tie a thread from that event to the skill that it's leading towards. Mm. And then you eventually get this bag of skills and it's training. Going back to athletes, you train muscles, They're emotional muscles, they're intellectual muscles, they're physical muscles, they're spiritual muscles. All those things come into play when you work. I know I sound like a nut, but that's
No, you don't.
But that way you're fearless and you it's
I'm not so fearless. I'm terrified.
Well, but you know been able the to channel it. Gonna, yeah. The parachute's gonna open. You know, you can leave because you know that you have done the work to create that foundation so you can go.
And I probably like you feel that the emotional muscle is usually the weakest one. And the hardest one to...
Not for me.
Not for you.
Oh, but yes.
But
yes.
In general, right?
I think so, because... And here's why. I think a lot of people who teach, and I think a lot of people who have a lot of opinions, and everybody does, tend to assume that if they have everything in a very neat box, that's what holds them together. Mm-hmm. And because it holds them together, it should hold you together.
Right.
And I don't know how everybody works differently. Mm-hmm. Every single person approaches their work differently, and it's very, very personal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I can only hope that the skills that I have acquired over time, if I can pass some of those on to somebody else, they make sense. If they don't, wipe your ass with them.
Right.
They make sense to me, and I can, in real time, in real work, articulate them. But for myself, doing them, I couldn't tell you what the hell's going on.
Okay.
I just couldn't. Mm-hmm. And I find it really boring.
Gets kind of James Lipton.
Well, it is.
Because then it gets into process and journey.
Charlie, you're not boring. First of all, you could talk about nothing and it wouldn't be boring.
I don't know.
Because there's too much life to your soul and your whole character, man. I love this guy. Well, that is all we have for part one with the awesome Charlie Adler, but be back next week for part two.
Yes, and in the meantime, keep up with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest at VOBuzzWeekly. Take care till next week, you guys, and just remember, you always have time for a little buzz.
Don't just listen to VO Buzz Weekly. Watch the show in stunning HD video at VOBuzzWeekly.com, on their YouTube channel, or on the app.
VO Buzz Weekly is sponsored by Chuck Duran's Demos That Rock. The voiceover demo producer to the stars is now available to you. Visit DemosThatRock.com and take your voiceover career to the next level.
See you next time. And remember, you always have time for a little buzz.